I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Ever notice that when a news story comes out of our part of the country, New England, the reporter is usually in Boston? Of course, for anyone who lives here or has visited our city, Boston is nothing like other parts of New England. Well, Liberia seems to be the Boston of Ebola news right now. That's where we hear a lot of Ebola stories coming from, yet the disease has affected at least five countries in West Africa and is crippling Guinea and Sierra Leone. We wanted to get the report card from Sierra Leone today, and for that we turned to Jeffrey Gettleman. He's covered many parts of the African continent for the New York Times. Today he's in Freetown, the capital of Sierra Leone. He says residents there are still struggling to combat the deadly virus.
I think people are trying. The response is getting stronger, but what's really frustrating is there's a ton of equipment here, supplies, expertise, but there's still people dying all over the place, needlessly.
So Liberia used to be where the Ebola outbreak seemed to be the hottest, but last month Liberia registered a third as many new cases as Sierra Leone. So why do you think things are so much worse in Sierra Leone compared to Liberia right now?
Liberia was really bad, and when the death rate gets extremely high and you have scores of people dying every day in small villages and specific communities, I think people get really scared and do whatever they can to avoid getting sick. That happened in Liberia. They went through that process where at first there was a lot of disbelief, there was suspicion, there was doubt about Ebola, and once that many people died, the doubt disappeared and people took action. So Sierra Leone is now climbing up that ugly curve and is hitting the point now where so many people are dying, there may be a greater response by the public to take this extremely seriously. So that's one factor. Another factor is I think the chain of command in Liberia was clearer. The U.S. military came in a big way. They were invited by the government to do a lot of work really fast, and they did it. They set up labs all over the country to test blood. They built treatment centers really fast. And here in Sierra Leone, it's a little more diffuse who's in control. You have the British military here, but not in the numbers that the Americans were in Liberia. You have the UN here, but they're sort of taking a backseat role. And the Sierra Leonean government, I think, is ambivalent about relying too much on international help. And that's complicating things because they're not just sort of throwing open the doors and saying, everybody come help us. They're also trying to play a role, and they just don't have the deep bench that one needs in a crisis like this.
Now, Jeffrey, you wrote recently about this really heart-wrenching story about a teenager who was stricken with Ebola. Her name is Isatu Sese, in a little village in Sierra Leone called Kissy Town. This girl's family had called an Ebola hotline 35 times for an ambulance. Why did it never arrive?
I came across this girl my first day here, and she was visibly sick but able to walk around, so she still could have been saved at that point. Her family was calling this equivalent of 911, and nobody was coming. We went back the next day, and she was really sick. She was curled up on the floor, writhing back and forth, delirious, very close to death's door, and still no ambulance. It's not clear why that happened. There had been a strike by some healthcare workers that week. Maybe that had something to do with it. And there's also this problem of beds. There aren't enough hospital beds. So the ambulance can't pick somebody up from their house and take them to a hospital if there's no place to put them. So all those factors together conspired against her. And she died right in front of us. And it was really upsetting because it was just a symbol of how all these resources are here, but they're still not working. And it's kind of like watching somebody drown in a lake or a pond right in front of you.
So what are the residents of Sierra Leone, what are Sierra Leoneans doing themselves in the absence of real clear government response right now?
Law and order are starting to break down a little bit, and a lot of people are taking matters into their own hands. There's homemade checkpoints all over the place, where these gangs of youth stop cars and take people out of their cars and measure their temperature with these infrared thermometers. And these groups can be pretty menacing, and they won't let you in their neighborhood if you have anything close to a fever. Other people are trying to isolate Ebola patients themselves in homes and villages, but that's really dangerous if you don't have the protective gear. There's a lot of frustration with the government and with the British response. You read in the papers almost every day here complaints that the British aren't doing enough, that Britain was the one that was supposed to help Sierra Leone, and they're just nowhere to be seen.
You mentioned roadblocks. We tend to think of roadblocks in West Africa as being manned by people with AKs. They're not using guns at these roadblocks, are they?
No. Instead of brandishing weapons, these guys pull out a digital thermometer. And it's kind of surreal. They're wearing like these dirty rubber gloves, which have actually, you know, no protective value if they've been used over and over again. And they're making people get out and wash their hands in a bucket of dirty water that supposedly has some bleach. So it's all kind of ad hoc. And I think if it comes down to that, this virus is not going to get under control anytime soon.
Finally, Jeffrey, today President Obama's at the National Institutes of Health checking in on progress on an Ebola vaccine and updating how the more than $6 billion to control the spread of the virus is being spent. There is encouraging news on the vaccine front, but how does this register with people like in Sierra Leone? Are they waking up every day and waiting expectantly for the headline, "Vaccine for Ebola Discovered"?
No, I don't think they are. I think people are just trying to get by. You see it as you drive through downtown Freetown. The streets are still teeming with people bumping into each other, the sweat flying off bodies. The people here, from what I've observed, are just trying to survive and stay away as best they can from sick people, but it's not always clear who's sick. For instance, I did an interview with a doctor for that story that you talked about, and I was talking to this guy for a half an hour. He looked totally fine. He worked in an Ebola hospital. And 2 days later, he came down with Ebola. Now, I wasn't sitting in his lap or shaking his hands. I'm trying to observe the policy, you shouldn't touch anybody. Still, it's scary. The Ebola is all around us.
How anxious does that make you feel?
I do a good job of sort of not thinking about it when I'm at my hotel working on my stories, not on the front lines of where people are getting sick. But when something like that happens with somebody that I was just with comes down with Ebola, it's terrifying. And I start replaying, you know, did I happen to touch him? Could he have, you know, maybe spat a little bit when he was talking? Some of it got into my mouth or my eye. You just don't know. So it's a very unsettling story to work on because unlike these other conflicts that have very obvious front lines and you can hear the gunfire miles away, there's no gunfire on this one. Somebody can be sick and walking around and getting other people sick totally silently, and none of us will be the wiser until it's too late.
The New York Times, Jeffrey Gettleman in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Jeffrey, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for the update.
Hey, glad to help. Thank you.